Hi, everybody, and welcome to We Gotta Talk. We're talking today about female friendships. So if you're anything like me, as your life has changed, your friend group has sort of changed along with you. Now, I have a best friend from third grade that I still keep in touch with, but I also have friends that I've met in the past 5 years that I consider to be some of the people closest to me in the world. Female friendships are amazing, but they can also be devastating and difficult. If you've ever had a friend breakup, you know what that means. So I wanted to dive into this topic a little bit more for a couple of reasons. Number one, because of course friendships are so important. And number two, because there has to be a way to get at this topic that really quantifies all these challenges that I think a lot of women have innately felt when it comes to their friendships. Things like, what actually matters to making and sustaining a good friendship? What are the metrics that we measure the value of a friendship on? And so much more. And today's guest has done so much research into female connection and relationships. So what she's sharing with us today isn't just theory, but it's also backed up by a lot of really interesting science and research. I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. We're going to go through all sorts of things. Things like how to know whether it's time to leave a friendship behind, the life stages that can be most challenging for friendships, and even a script to start a difficult conversation with a friend that you just don't want to have, but you know you have to. I hope you enjoy this episode of We Gotta Talk. All right, welcome everybody. My guest today is a female friendship coach and educator and host of the popular podcast, Friend Forward. Danielle Bayer Jackson is also just about to release her new book, which should be out, if you're listening to this, any day now, May 7th, which is called Fighting for Our Friendships, the Science and Art of Conflict and Connection in Women's Relationships. The genesis of this interview, Danielle, is that this is a topic that apparently a lot of people want to read about. I did a post on this years ago that still indexes at the top of my reads because female friendships confound us. They comfort us, they confound us. And as your title of your book says, there's an art to it. So I think I want to start out the interview with asking you, what makes female friendships so complex and fascinating that they have become your life's work?
Yeah, you know, I looked up the definition of the word complicated a couple years ago because my husband had just watched me kind of have a hard talk with a friend, and he kind of scoffed to himself and he was like, oh my God, you would never see guys doing this. It's never going to be that complicated. So I looked up the word complicated and it said the intersection of many parts. And I thought that's exactly why it feels complicated, because for women, according to the research, we integrate our friends into our lives to the degree of a sibling, men to the degree of a cousin. We are so deeply woven together, bringing all these parts with high expectations that there is a lot going on. So to your point, there are these high highs and we look at our friends in such a great light. But many of us also have stories of heartache at the hands of a friend as well. So, yes, it is complicated.
I love how your book and your approach in general on the podcast breaks this down from a research-oriented angle. I think that's really unique when you look at something a little like a soft topic like friendships. You can think, oh, how could you quantify that? Can you tell everybody the type of research that you look into that helps you get an actual quantifiable look at how female friendships work?
Yeah. So I actually started out as a high school English teacher, then worked my way up to academic chair. So I spent a lot of time in education, you know, in that world and with my students and things like that. And, you know, long story short, for the past 6 years, I study what the latest research has to say about women's cooperation, communication, and conflict. And I kind of feel like when I was a high school teacher, it kind of served as an unofficial lab because I saw with my own eyes every single day the differences between how the girls would fight with one another, sometimes silently, but as a woman, I knew something's going down, you know, but with the boys, it looked a lot different, how they perceived relational violations very differently. And so to see that, oh gosh, this is a science. There are people who dedicate their career to study was very interesting to me. And I really enjoy being able to offer research-based strategies so people know this is not Danielle's opinion. This is not Danielle's life. It's grounded in something that's been studied.
It seems to support the idea that I think a lot of us have always intrinsically known, especially as women, that we're just different than men. We do life different, right? There's layers of sensitivity and things that we seem, as your husband so appropriately noted, that we bring to the table that they don't. And by the way, my husband has said the same thing. He's like, I just don't get it. I'm like, you don't have to get it. Okay. This is exactly. My life. So I'm interested to know if there's been any, well, what the research says too about just why and how specifically women are different. And you said something about conflict and perception and things. And what are the studies and bits of research that sort of validate what I think most of us kind of felt already?
Yeah, definitely. So down to our communication, I mean, there are specific things showing that, you know, even when we talk, we offer more back channel communication, meaning as a woman's talking, we're known to say, yeah, right. It's so small, but sometimes we feel like a woman's not listening or connecting with us if she doesn't do those things. But men don't do that as often. So even down to like linguistics, and it starts from childhood, we even use more language like we and let's. So they've monitored children, and children, when they're playing outside, they say, you know, oh, let's go over here. Do you guys want to do this? Boys are not doing that. They're offering more commands. Go over here. Pick up that stick, you know, so from the beginning, from being young, the way we communicate with one another and the consequences that we know that we're going to have socially if we don't abide by certain rules. And then there are cultural expectations. We know that women have a fear of being perceived as being difficult. And I think a lot of us operate with that concern in mind. I often talk to women and they'll say things like, well, but I don't want to hurt her feelings, or I don't want to look like the bad guy. There's so much concern for maintaining an appearance of cooperation, because we know there will be consequences that men don't have to calculate. And this kind of informs the things we do, the things we don't do, saying we're okay when we're not okay, telling a woman, oh, no, we're cool. No, we're fine. I'm not bothered by that, honestly, when we are, you know, gossiping even, because it doesn't feel safe to go to her directly, because am I going to look like I'm being drama? So I go and I kind of express it to a third party, you know, so there's a lot of ways in how we operate that's become the norm, and these almost girl codes that we know to do that can either account for us being connected or us falling apart.
Yeah, there's just so many more, like you said, complexities. It's complicated. I found it really interesting how you you called these things the three affinities. These are the ways that women find each other and stay together. You could call them maybe the pillars of female friendship. Can you tell us what the three affinities are and how they function in both healthy relationships and maybe how they also serve as points for deviation when we leave those friendships behind?
Yeah. So the three affinities of female friendship was designed because as I kept looking across various disciplines, you're looking at linguistics, neurology, psychology, sociology, any of those disciplines at the intersection of just women, the same themes kept coming up. And so I kind of designed a framework that kind of outlines them in an easy to remember way. And that is symmetry, support, and secrecy. These three things are highly prioritized in women's friendships, and they account for our connection. And whenever someone perceives a violation in one of those three domains, there's going to be tension. It doesn't automatically spell doom for the relationship, but we are going to need to recalibrate. So with symmetry, you know, women really value feeling a sense of sameness, reciprocity, and balance. It's probably the number one grievance I hear. She's not reciprocating. She's not giving like I am. She's not showing up like I am. And, you know, my thought there is just that there are power dynamics in every other context of women's lives. We're mothers, we're, you know, partners, and women still do the, you know, more of the share of domestic labor. Like, we're so imbalanced in every other context that I think we have a deep expectation of, in my friendships, you're my peer. We are the same. I need your help side to side, right? And so for symmetry, that's very important to us. And then there is support, because the research shows that the number one thing women look for in their same-sex friendships is emotional support. Now, that's very elusive and subjective, which accounts for a lot of issues, but it's the number one thing we're looking for. So as soon as we feel like she didn't support me, she's not supporting me, that can spell tension. And finally, secrecy. And that just is not just about literal secrets, but just the essence of that feeling. So being in a vault together that's mutually exclusive and filled with mutual self-disclosure, because sharing with one another, that's how we establish and negotiate trust. So if either person feels like the other violated, one of those three, there's going to be issues.
Yeah, it's so funny that last one, the last S, where you're talking about sharing and vulnerabilities. What, what was that S again?
Secrecy.
To me, that is maybe the most, one of the more impactful metrics of friendships. I find that I'm the type of person who leads with vulnerability and probably will say a whole lot of personal stuff about myself almost as an entree into the conversation. And I would love to like psychoanalyze myself and understand why I lead with that type of like really, really raw vulnerability. But maybe because I do that so much, I tend to value that. And when I don't get that in friendships. Mm-hmm. I've never had anyone articulate that before, but it makes sense, right? That is, to me, one of the more important things. So do these things sort of equally weight, generally speaking, or in like in my case, can one be more of a valid metric, say, in assessing a female friendship than the next?
Yeah, I would say, you know, all three kind of equally, but everybody's different. Every friendship's different. And we have to give space to acknowledge that friendships themselves are dynamic. So they'll always be changing. Maybe, you know, I'm a new mom. And so what I want more than anything is tangible forms of support. And, and it's top of mind, you know, so those things account for why we feel so close, especially even in forming new friendships, right? You share a little bit to see how she receives it. Or if she supports you with something small, you're kind of looking at her like, oh, okay. You know, like, so those things help us to get close. And so it's different from person to person, and each individual gets to determine what it looks like for her. But again, bridging the gap requires, I got to communicate it. I got to be honest about it. I have to hear what you need. So constant communication and recalibration to feel a sense of harmony in each of those three domains.
I noticed that there seem to be what I call in my mind, big break points for friendships. College can be one, although with technology these days, it's easier to stay in touch. But that is one because we all grow in different directions. Marriages or some type of formal commitment to our partners and babies. Do you have any personal thoughts on that theory, and is it just me, or does everything sort of thin out at each one of those key points and then sort of repopulate with a different group of people?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. 100%. I definitely see what you see, both anecdotally and the research. You know, my theory on that too is that, you know, and I don't mean to generalize men, but I think it's interesting because obviously we all evolve. We're always evolving. But when I think about a man's life cycle compared to a woman's, when they get married, when they have children, a lot of times on the outside, their life doesn't look like it changes much. I know that they change internally and a lot of things shift, but they still get to hang out with friends. They're still climbing the work ladder at corporate. They're still, their life kind of looks the same. And for women, it looks a lot different at each of those flashpoints that you just described. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, our friendships are going to shift, our priorities, knowing that my baby needs me to survive. I'm breastfeeding and all the things. And my brain, I've got brain fog for the past year and a half after having the baby. And I have ideas about what a wife's supposed to be. So I feel like I need to really double down at being at home. And there are so many adjustments and fluctuations and demands that alter our priorities, the time that we have available to leisurely hang with friends, the pressure to put the partner first. And so now my girlfriends are going to hear from me when they hear from me. I mean, you put these things together, and 100%, I often hear women say, you know, when I had a baby, everything changed. When I got married, everything changed. So I see that too. Yes.
I mean, can we, let's hover on that for a moment, because I want to give some actionable advice to women who are at any of those stages, who see value in love their friends and want to maintain them, but also recognize that, hey, maybe they're not married yet, or, you know, I'm not married yet and she's getting married. And let's be honest, like there can be a twinge of jealousy or an envy, you know, I wish I had found my person type thing. So speak to the girl or to the woman who is going through one of those moments on either side and how she can keep a friendship strong.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that because it's really hard. The first thing I'm going to say is to, I know people say this often, give yourself grace, but you all have never had experience being friends like this before. So it should feel disruptive. You've never had to negotiate hanging out, spending time together, talking on the phone when somebody has a baby they have to run home to, or she can't focus because she's thinking about what she needs to do to pack the diaper bag, or the baby's got a rash, or you've never done friendship like this. So take a breath and give yourself permission to figure it out. The second thing is you can front load the conversation by saying, you know, by speaking to the elephant in the room. A lot of time friendships change and we don't want to say anything because we don't want to look like we're being sensitive or like high strung. It's okay to say, okay, I feel like things are different now that you're married and I miss you. Or, okay, I want to make sure that we don't lose us, right? Yeah. It's okay to say so. I also suggest having a friendship ritual, which sounds kind of cheesy, but what is a time that we can commit to so that we know life might get crazy, but I know that I'm going to see you every Friday at 10 for our 30-minute FaceTime or every first Tuesday of the month for trivia night. But what is something we can have be our thing that we protect to offer a layer of security to the friendship to know, okay, she's putting me first. She's putting me in the calendar. And also, you know, to remove the mental labor of constantly being like, can you do Tuesday at 7, May 6th? Right. Who's doing that? You know, so those three things can kind of help us to stay connected when life kind of gets in the way.
Yeah, that exercise in and of itself can make a friendship like sour. I know, you know, trying to get people to visit me, you know, I moved away from a core group of friends, you know, and does this month work? And what about this? And then I'm like, and it doesn't work out and I'm hurt. And I'm like, obviously it's not a priority. And then like, stop, because it's logistically difficult. But if I had had something sort of baked in or something that allows us to continue to like recognize each other and the value we bring, that probably would have taken some of that hurt out of the equation.
100%. Yeah. It's tricky to navigate. I mean, we're also navigating these relationships as people, as tender people. No one wants to be rejected. No one wants to feel like they're not priority or top of mind. No one likes feeling like, hey, they haven't reached out to me. You know, that doesn't make you petty or sensitive. It makes you invested and it makes you a person who wants to feel cared for and desired, even in a platonic context. So it's hard just doing relationships in general, but especially in friendship when there's so much ambiguity. Right. In every other relationship, it is defined. We know who's doing what. I know who my emergency contact is. But in friendship, are we friends? Are we not? Is this too much contact? Is it not? You know, so I think that means there's more of a sense of urgency to have to communicate in friendships to reduce the levels of ambiguity as much as possible.
And I would love your like outright assurance. And just to say this in plain language, because I feel like people need to hear it. You can still be friends with people, even if they don't have kids and you do, or you can still 100%. Be friends. Like people think, oh, well, you know, she doesn't get it. And there's an element to that. There's definitely some things that I will never understand that one of my single friends is experiencing. And likewise, they won't understand. But like, can you just put that theory to rest? Because I hate to see friendships busted up over stuff like this.
I do too. And yes, 100%. Mom friends, you definitely need child-free friends and vice versa. If you don't have kids, you need some mom friends just for perspective, right? And they need you. You know, I think about how way back when, how we all helped to raise each other's kids together, whether you biologically had them or not, we were just in the village together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll say this, you have various aspects of your identity and they each need to be affirmed. And the research shows that people with relational diversity are happier people. So by that, I mean, if you have your church friend, your happy hour friends, your gym friends, your mom friends, those people have better well-being according to the research, as opposed to the person who just has mom friends.
Oh, that's so interesting.
To some extent, I need people who affirm the various aspects of my identity. So I understand the woman who's maybe frustrated because she's like, man, I need more mom friends. You probably do. You need people to affirm that lifestyle and to say, girl, I see you. But that doesn't mean that's all you need because you are a multidimensional person.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It like gives us permission to acknowledge that you need, my mom would always say, like, you have different, this sounds crude and I'm probably not repeating it correctly, but you have different friends for different reasons, for different seasons. Like you have she just said what you said, which helped my young brain at the time, like going through all kinds of crazy stuff as like a high school girl. You know, sometimes this is your friend for a certain period of time and things change, or sometimes this is your friend. Like it takes a whole group of different types of people, like you said, to make you feel fulfilled. And it's okay that that's my gym friend and that we only see each other once a week. And it's okay that I have my great friends from where I'm from and I see them maybe once a year. They all sort of add to the mix.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. In your book, you go through all of these different, like, I guess you could call them stereotypes of friends, the flaky friend, the friend who doesn't reciprocate, the gossip, the love obsessed friend, the controlling friend, the jealous friend, the newly changed friend, the clingy friend, the negative friend. I feel like we could dedicate an entire podcast of each to each one of these sort of friend types. But if we could just sort of quickly run through them, because I think people will see someone, or maybe they are that friend. Can we run down a couple of these?
Yeah, definitely. So in the book, we divided it into two parts. The first is taking an aerial view of women's friendships to explain the mechanics, mm-hmm. what brings us together and what tears us apart at a high level. But then we come back down to the ground and get in the trenches, because you still got to know, how do I navigate the day-to-day business of being friends? And so we thought about including friend types, and that's not to be reductive, but it's because when we are in moments of conflict, we tend to reduce our friend to the problem she presents. Mm. I start not seeing your humanity, and you suddenly just start to become the clingy friend to me. And so we described a couple different types to outline what it looks like, how to consider what she might be going through to help draw some compassion, how to respond to her, and then finally, some signs to know that you're that friend to right. some people in your life.
You know, sometimes you're the problem.
Sometimes you're the problem. I know I've definitely been the problem.
Oh, and yeah.
So, you know, a lot of us, we know, okay, the jealous friend or envious friend, we know this to be a person who you are suspicious of whether or not she's really happy for you. Right. And a lot of us feel a lot of shame, I've noticed, in suspecting that a friend might be jealous, because it feels like we think we're so great. So we don't want to ever be like, she's jealous. But that's a big one, because separation starts to come when we feel like, again, things aren't reciprocal. And this friend wants to compete with me. That feels like a violation. So that's a big one. The negative friend is another one we hear. Again, because women are tasked with so much, we've got our own stuff going on. So it's like, I do want to support you. But every time we're together, for some reason, I'm depleted, or I feel like I'm being used for my service as a therapist and not as a peer, your friend. So that's another big one. We've had women say that they resonate with the love obsessed friend, which we all love, but you know, the friend who, she no longer is asking you about your life. She's dominating the conversations with the flavor of the week. She's canceling plans last minute because suddenly he has a free hour, you know? So we start to question, am I a placeholder? Or, you know, do you really value me? So some of these types are to kind of help us see, man, this is an issue that's really, really hard. But I hope that it gives women hope that, okay, this is something we could actually talk through and figure out. Sometimes it's not figure outable, and that's okay too.
Yeah. I want to get to that. Do each sort of prototype of friend that you run through, is there an option or a script of some sort or some kind of endpoint that you offer in the book for people who say we have the love obsessed friend and we all want to shake them and be like, gosh, you're worth so much more than this. Stop chasing him. Go live your life. Like, do you offer us that's what I can call it, a script or some sort of line or something that we can use to access that person?
We do always. So each one is the section of the types is an outline of what she's going through, 3 to 4 reasons that she might be presenting this problem, so that you can say, oh, interesting, as opposed to taking it so personally. Like, she's such a crappy friend. Well, maybe there's other things going on. But then we do get into 3 or 4 scripts or strategies to respond, to make it stop, or to help her see the impact of her behavior. So to the love-obsessed friend, for example, instead of me forming it as an accusation, you're so obsessed, I don't even know who you are, no one's going to respond to that. Let's just keep it real. It might feel good. I'm not responding to that. Okay.
Right.
But instead of an accusation, it's an invitation, because at the heart of it, you miss your friend. At the heart of it, you are frustrated because you can't recognize her. She's become a shapeshifter for every man she dates. Yeah. So it's speaking to the heart of the matter instead of an accusation. So you might say something like, you know, hey, you know that I love seeing you so happy and I love this for you, but I'm struggling because on the other side, I don't know how to respond. Like, when you change things up on me last minute, or, you know, when all we're talking about is him. So I'm struggling because I'm torn between the two. We call that telegraphing your dilemma, where I say both sides to her. I'm saying out of my mouth the internal conflict I'm experiencing to have her see, oh, shoot, I didn't realize I was putting her in that position. And we can work collaboratively to figure out moving forward, what are we going to do? Because this ain't going to work.
Okay. So before we get to how we know if a friendship has truly run its course. I want to focus on the difficult conversations part of this. And you just gave us two really great examples for a specific type of friend going through a situation and something that might work. But I would love for you to help encourage people listening to lean into that. I think, you know, for me personally, difficult conversations are not a challenge. I have some other challenges, but I really do. I have seen the value in confronting things and addressing it head on. But I think it's only because I was forced into that. For those who are a little bit more reticent and who would say something like, you know, Danielle, I love my friend. And yes, this is a concern that I've had for a while, but I don't have the energy to do it, or I just feel like it's going to be poorly received, or I would rather just vent about it and come back and act like nothing because I just don't have the time to invest into it right now. What advice would you give them so that you would encourage them to lean into having some of these conversations?
Yeah. First, I would totally validate it is uncomfortable. Conflict is inherently uncomfortable. To give feedback, to hear feedback is like the worst. Okay. So I totally get it. I think it also speaks to the heart that you have. You're probably being mindful of your friend's feelings. Mm-hmm. You don't want to rock the boat. You value what you have, and it feels like a risk. And it is. It is. And it's very vulnerable to raise an issue with a friend. It's risky. I'll also tell that person, the research shows that on the other side of healthy conflict, people report feeling closer to that person. Mm. So is there a chance this doesn't go well and she gets defensive and mad? Yes. It is equally possible that she says, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I'm so glad you told me that. And your friendship looks better than before. And it's a risk we have to take. But for the woman who's being silent because she doesn't want to rock the boat, I would just encourage her. I want you to count the cost because it is costing you something. And you would eventually decide if it's worth the constant dread, the anxiety, the passive aggression you feel yourself having. Mm. Is it worth it? The stomach ache, you know, that you're having every time you're around her. So you go ahead and count the cost. And I think that'll help guide you.
I think you hit on a really interesting point there, the passive aggression that then builds up and gives us this false sense of justification in walking away from the friendship and relinquishing your own responsibility. Oh, she's so annoying. I could never have that conversation with her. All she talks about is her boyfriend, blah, blah. Like that, what that does too, is that passive aggression is just sort of a false sense of your own righteousness, right? And that's dangerous in its own way too, because I think like, you know, it's easy to sit back and criticize from afar, but unless you've made the good faith effort, maybe there's something you need to be working on to not feel that too. Passive aggression is just a huge thing in women, I feel like.
Oh yeah, 100%. I know I've definitely been guilty of it. And when I think about it, it's because the times I did it was, you know, I didn't know how to calmly tell you how I'm feeling. I didn't know how to do it. It could be because it's all I've seen is to make little snippy remarks and you'll pick up on my cues and suddenly know why I'm really mad and stop doing the thing. And then phew, I didn't have to say it. She picked up on my cues, you know? So I get it. It feels tender and risky. But you walk around with growing resentment and your friend walks around not knowing what she did to tick you off. I mean, it's just not productive.
I wish this were taught in elementary school, by the way. Can you imagine, Danielle, this is a business idea. Okay, get your course all put together, get it tailor-made for elementary, middle, and high schools, and girl, bring this in.
Like, we're working on it. We started doing assemblies and the whole thing because I know that if I had this in high school, 100% life would have looked a lot different.
I mean, it was horrible. High school was horrible for me. And it's like, I wish you had been there. It's so funny too, because, you know, the people that were involved in on that side of the horrible moment for me and whatever, maybe I'm not blameless, but years later came back and were like, I'm so sorry. You know, like people recognize at some point their role. And I do too in friendships that have gone bad or things that have happened. So if we could prevent, you know, that run period of 2 to 3 years or 10 years or whatever it takes, all the anguish and hurt we could do away with.
I totally agree. And I love that for you. I love that people came back and said, okay, I realize one person.
But
and
still,
maybe they'll come around 10 more years or something.
I am so blessed. You know what? And that's part of it too, on this end of things. And I think a lot of women have experienced bullying and in different forms. I think the important part is just to give it, like you said, give it grace, love your life enough that I don't need, I know now as an adult, like I never needed that anyway. Yeah. That wasn't something, but I can't wait. When you're touring schools, you need to reach out because I want to get you down here at some places.
Oh yeah. I would love that.
Okay. Let's move on to when to move on. It's a fact that some relationships, as sweet as they may have been in their high season, are not destined to make it through to the next one. How do we know if a friendship has run its course?
So every situation is different, but there are some, a couple things that I think are kind of unequivocal. Okay. The first is you don't like how you feel about yourself when you are together. And whatever that looks like, whatever the details are, I don't know if that's, you know, she gossips so much that you find yourself doing it too, or complains so much that you, or she's got you involved in things and you don't feel proud of. If you don't like who you are when you two are together, that's a big one.
Right.
If you find that despite your best efforts, it feels like it's not reciprocal. And, you know, that's a whole conversation about how to restore a sense of balance, because a lot of times we feel like it's imbalanced and we're done.
Right.
So there's other ways before you get to this, but if despite your best efforts, it's not reciprocal in any form, because sometimes it can be imbalanced in terms of how we're contributing emotionally, financially, time-wise, okay? If try as you might, it just feels like you're the unrequited lover, okay? And you're just not getting it back. It might be time to either modify your expectations or to turn your head on a swivel and look at other people who are eager to give you that attention.
Mm-hmm.
If you find that the friendship is more depleting than energizing. And I can't stress enough, friendships themselves are going to give you stress. Being in relationship with another human being is going to have points of stress. But if overall the friendship itself feels like a stressful obligation, you have to keep going. I think that's something to look at too. So I think a lot of things can be solved. I really do. But things like that make it really difficult. Oh, and another one I'll say is if you feel fearful that if you show up as your real self, you're going to get punished. Meaning those friendships we're in where if you know you speak your real opinion, or if you disagree with her or whatever, she's going to give you the silent treatment. She's going to get mad at you. She's going to talk about you. So you're constantly measuring what you say and do so you don't get in trouble. Oh no, we don't have time for that. Absolutely not.
Can I ask you a personal advice now that I have an expert? This is one thing that's really weighed on me. I would just love your input.
Let's do it.
We won't hold you to anything, you know? Okay. So I have this friend who I was extremely close with in college, and she went back home, lives far away, like far enough that it's not a Southwest flight. And we stayed in great touch. I went on to have children and get married earlier than she did. And she kind of fell off the map, and probably 5 years ago. And I was repeatedly at the beginning point of that 5 years ago, emailing, hey, let's talk. Can you WhatsApp today? Can you FaceTime? Like, I want to try to see if you're coming in this direction anytime soon. How are you? What's new? Like, I was emailing and WhatsApping and whatever. Nothing. And Danielle, like probably, I don't know, once every couple months, I just pick it back up and in the hope. And this was someone I was extremely close with.
Mm.
And it just kind of faded away. And then one day I get an email back from her that says something like, I really miss you. I just really missed you. And I wrote back and I was like, this is stupid. I've been missing you for 5 years. I've been emailing you. Like, come correct or don't come at all. Like, I wasn't mean, but I was like, duh, I miss you too. Have you gotten my 55 emails? And I was like, let's connect. And I gave it one more fair shot. And she's still stayed away. Now, a normal person who can take social cues would be like, huh, Sunny, this friendship is over. But I'm so sad, Danielle. And I feel like I put in a good faith effort to maintain that connection. I'm going to ask you this, even though I know the answer. What do I need to do? And how do I, maybe is the more important question, come to terms with the fact that this relationship maybe expired and not on the terms that I wanted it to, mm-hmm. but it did.
Yeah, that's so hard, mostly because it's confusing, right? If a person checks in and you're like, oh, wait, there's a sign of life, and then it's taken away. So, you know, it's really hard because women already ruminate more than men, which is why they think that we report more anxiety and depression, because we're just thinking, what could that have been? What did she get my emails? What does this mean? We're thinking. And it's really hard because I'm sure things like that don't help. But if you've made multiple attempts to restore the friendship and you've already kind of seeing that she is well, physically well. Because when I don't hear from somebody for a long time, then it's like, okay, are you alive? Are you okay? Right. And she gives you that sign of life and then goes away again. You could still hold a very sentimental place for her and you can still wish her well. And if you want, you can still say, hey, if whenever she's ready, I'm ready to hang out, if that's what you determine. But sometimes it's not about the person. Sometimes it's about our goals. And if your friendship goal for this relationship is, I want to spend time together, I want to connect and be communicative, and a person's just not giving it to you.
Yeah.
At some point I say, I love you, but our goals are not aligned because this kind of communication style is not going to work for me. The checking in once a year, the not responding to my efforts doesn't work for me. And so I'm going to let it go because of what this does to me. And then you would determine on the back end what that looks like for you. Does it mean you totally are done? Does it mean you kind of keep yourself open if she does check in? But yeah, it would be really hard if a friend fails to acknowledge, you know, because I don't know if you're looking for an apology, but also it's hard when there's been something that feels like, man, this has been a huge break or this is really affecting me. And a person who does not give you any acknowledgement of the fact that I've been inconsistent and kind of ghosting, it's really hard to recover because we're like, how do I have reassurance that this wouldn't happen again if the person right. doesn't even see what her, you know, flakiness is kind of causing me. So it is really tough, but yeah, that would be for you to determine, I guess. How do you feel right now? Do you feel like it's something that you're willing to let go? Or do you feel like you're still in the stage of trying to entertain all the possibilities for why things might be this way?
I think I'm ready to, I have to be ready to let it go or else I'd be a buffoon. I'm sad about it though.
Yeah,
I'm sad. And you know what? The door is open. I'm not holding a grudge at all, but it's just, it's so interesting. This is so morbid and strange. All the way friendships can die. You know, mm-hmm. I just wouldn't have predicted that for us. It's like a boyfriend gone wrong who did mm-hmm. something crazy. Like I wouldn't have predicted this ending.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And we respect people's need to go through whatever they're going through. It's just confusing. And I guess that illustrates a point that I think maybe other people probably need to hear is that it can end in like all kinds of different ways, you know, like,
oh yeah.
And it's not always clean and explicable. It's sometimes it's totally inexplicable.
Yeah. I think that's what I often hear women say like, oh my gosh, I feel like this friend breakup was like worse than breaking up with my college boyfriend. And, you know, and you know, I think that for two reasons, breakups with women hit a little different, with our friends. One is because when you're entering into something romantic, you kind of know that there's a chance this won't work out, especially because traditionally we're with one person. So he's either going to be the one or not. Okay. So it's definitely painful, but it wasn't a total surprise.
Right.
With a friend, you are often not going into meeting another woman wondering about whether or not it's going to end. We're not doing that. And so we have to reconcile our expectations with reality when it happens. And that is just like, that's really hard in your brain to do. Right. And I think it's also difficult because the research shows that, or we talked about like how women integrate their friends into their lives so much, but it also shows that women have more breakups, friend breakups than men do. This is not because we're just so petty and fragile. It's actually the opposite. It's because our friendships are so deep. Like you just said, we were so close. They're so deep that you're not having fallouts with people you're not close to. So I probably am having endings with people I'm super close to, but for men generally, they're not very close and experiencing a lot of platonic emotional intimacy with friends. So they're often not falling out because it ain't that deep to begin with.
It's so funny.
So the numbers
wasn't worth having, guys.
Yeah, exactly. So the numbers, there is a greater likelihood that women are experiencing what you just described, where it's like, you were so close to me. I don't know what's going on. And this is deeply painful.
Yeah, it stinks. It really does. Danielle, one final question before we wrap up. And this is a personal theory of mine that I'm so curious to know if your research supports. I have this theory that goes from the playground to late adulthood is that women really seek someone to follow. And you see it on the playground as the girl who comes up with the fun ideas and, you know, the one who's like, hey, let's, the girl you were saying in the beginning, let's, right? Using that language. And then as an adult, it's the one that people go to and like, oh my gosh, I love your shoes. I love your purse. And what do you, and that it encourages that, what was the book? The Mean Girls book, Queen Bee. It encourages that queen bee worker bee relational kind of interaction where there's a striving and that women, most women just want someone to tell them what to do, what to wear, who to be friends with. And when that queen bee says, she's not okay, she's okay, she's not okay, she's okay, she's that, it perpetuates, like, it's the negative side of the way that we interact and have friendships as females. Am I making this up? Are my observations incorrect? Or is there an element of that that carries on from the young to the old?
Oh, I could totally see that, that fawning, that desire to be, to have approval. And, you know, I'm no psychologist. I am also curious around, like, how does that go back to like the mother-daughter relationship where she's seeking that, you know, I don't really know. Oh, I do know that it probably is more prevalent in women than men, because men really value hierarchy, status, you know, so things like that. So it doesn't look like an extension of their manhood to be the guy who's like, hey guys, can I come in? Hey guys, doesn't look like, quote unquote, I'm saying this kind of just, I know it's a stereotype, but the traditionally masculine thing to do. You don't get points as a man for being like, hey guys, where do you want to go? Do you guys approve of me? But for women, if our whole thing that gets us praise is being cooperative and being, you know, approved, then it's good. We have, it's more acceptable to be the girl who's like, hey guys, what are we wearing? I love your dress. I love being complimentary is being praised. Being a good girl, we get points for. Being cooperative, we get points for. So I could totally see how more of that personality and desire motivation is more prevalent among women. Totally. I totally see that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a great explanation for it. I'd never thought of it that way. It's what society has sort of encouraged us to behave as. Oh my gosh, Danielle, I could talk to you and talk to you and talk to you and run all my harebrained theories past you all day. But I know you have some other interviews that you're committed to. I want to thank you for spending time with me today and answering all these questions. The book is called Fighting for Our Friendships, The Science and Art of Conflict and Connection in Women's Relationships. It's out as of May 7th. And I should be able to get this out before then. So guys, there are some bonuses you get with a pre-order, right, Danielle?
Absolutely. We've got book club guides with extra discussion questions and an accountability toolkit to teach you how can I keep my friend accountable without threatening the friendship, and a 21-day audio course of how to tangibly improve your friendships, like with something actionable every day. So we really put a bunch of good stuff in there. And it's just my way of saying thank you to those who are opting in early to reading the book. And even those who are choosing to make it their book club pick for the summer, I'm really excited about. So my prayer is just that, you know, this book helps to equip women with things to actionably do to have more satisfaction in their relationships. And I hope it also offers them some optimism about all that's possible in your friendship landscape. That is my hope.
Yep. Don't avoid those difficult conversations, right?
That's right.
All right. Danielle, you were just a joy to talk with. Thank you again for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this latest episode of We Gotta Talk. If you don't mind, I would love if you could leave a rating and review. Those help this show to get out to people who might find it useful or entertaining. I'm so grateful for your support. Please follow on Instagram at Sunny Abada or check out our latest blog post at wegottatalk.com/blog. See you next time.